then they can be out.
Providing there is not a collective bargaining agreement in effect. However, I believe that, and I don't claim to be an expert in this field, but I believe that under the statute that there is a window of time, I believe 90 days before the expiration of a contract, and they could essentially give notice of their intent.
To opt out?
I believe so.
So then they could not enter into an agreement until, and essentially opt out of the, of PARA, though, at the end of the contract that they're presently in, or 90 days prior to the contract ending or something like that. Is that right?
Representative Mackey, through the chair, I believe that is correct. What one must keep in mind, however, is that in order for this to take effect, it has to go to a vote of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So one could argue that if an ongoing negotiation is in effect and the local community chooses to want to go to an election, that it could cause a period of where you do not have an ongoing contract. However, generally, as I understand it, in most labor contracts, if you have negotiation and you have not come to an agreement, that the current or the expired contract will still remain in effect until such time that some other decision had been made.
I think that's correct. Section.
Chairman, if I can.
I'm sorry, Representative Porter, continue.
I'm trying to figure out how this would work. You know, if a city now has labor contracts and is in PARA, or let's make it simple, it has a labor contract and it's in PARA, can it ask its citizens whether they want to remain in PARA and get the vote out of the way? And let's say that the citizens vote out of PARA, but they've got this contract. I'm assuming that it would remain in effect until it expired. Then they would give notice within 90 days that they were going to go along with the vote and opt out of PARA. Is that?
Representative Porter, through the chair, basically, as you just stated, to an extent that is correct, if they have an agreement with the bargaining unit and they go to a vote of the people and the people vote to opt out of PARA, the existing contract would remain in effect until the time that it expired. Within that 90 days before the expiration of the contract, that political subdivision could, in fact, give notice of their intent to negotiate a different contract. Then essentially, that would give, and provided that the local political subdivision had in place a method to replace the collective bargaining agreement, their own collective bargaining agreement, then they could, in fact, make this transition and then go back to the table in good faith based on their local policies to negotiate a contract with the organized unit.
I guess I understand. I had one other question.
Porter?
In reading the, and it's, I guess it's been a while, in reading the resolution by the City of Fairbanks, they mentioned PARA provides for mandatory binding arbitration concerning wages, hours, and terms, all for Class 1. Never mind. I answered my own question.
Yeah, it does, but not for the rest of us.
I didn't.
All right. I think the chair would now like to get a little more testimony from others, and then we can ask some questions. You'll be here, so we can
yes.
ask some questions. All right. Joan Wilkerson, signed up from APDA, AFL-CIO. Joan, would you like to join us, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joan Wilkerson. I'm the South East Regional Manager for APEA AFT, which represents about 2,500 public employees around the state. And today I'm also speaking on behalf of the Alaska AFL-CIO, which represents about 50,000 members. We adamantly oppose HB 255, as should all supporters of collective bargaining, because this bill is intended to do nothing less than eliminate collective bargaining for thousands of Alaska's workers. By establishing a revolving door system of opting in or out a para, the bill would not only deny the basic human right to collectively bargain with their employer to employees in political subdivisions which opt out of the system, but it would also render meaningless the system left behind for those areas which continue to bargain with their employees. Since the notion of good faith bargaining will cease to exist when an employer can always threaten to opt out if it doesn't like the way things are going in negotiations. The immediate practical effect of this legislation will be full employment for attorneys, of which I admit that I'm a member of the bar, but I don't want this to happen anyway.
You're doing pretty good up to that point.
Yeah. Shoot, now I'll just start all over. To the detriment of both taxpayers and employee groups, the legal issues raised by an election to opt out while a collective bargaining agreement is in effect, which I'm glad you brought up, will tie both the courts and the Labor Relations Agency in knots. I certainly didn't get the answer that I heard today. I did not get at that out of the reading the bill. Even where a healthy and viable bargaining relationship exists between the local government and its employees, a small number of anti-union voters in a community sufficient to put the issue on the ballot by initiative can require annual elections with the attendant expenditure of public and private resources better used elsewhere. PARA has governed public employment relations in the state for 20 years. There was nothing inadvertent about its intent to apply to political subdivisions. A floor amendment allowed a one-time opt-out, of which many municipalities have made use. Some, such as Fairbanks and Cordova, have subsequently elected to opt back in. Some decisions must be final and binding. The decision to engage in good faith bargaining with employees is one such decision. We urge you to go on record in support of collective bargaining and keep this bill in committee. Are there any questions?
I might ask if you would mind giving us for the record. PARA has been around, as you say, for a long period of time. What are some of the positive sides of it for municipalities as well as for the employees? I'd like to try to establish some of the assets of the original bill and the bill as it currently exists.
The bill as it currently exists is essentially a bill of rights for public employees in the state of Alaska. It allows them to exercise their fundamental constitutional rights to association by virtue of their relationship with each other as employees of a public government, of a public entity. It creates and answers to the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. It permits corporations to form through the associations of these employees and to collectively bargain with employers. Without it, in my exposure, limited as it is, to municipalities or boroughs where that have opted out, is that the employees have virtually no rights whatsoever. It was my understanding from this bill, from PARA itself, that the initial intent of the legislature was that if a political subdivision was going to opt out of PARA, that they should pass an ordinance which would more or less take the place of PARA. And where I've seen this in action, and without naming any names, an area down here in southeast Alaska, a particular municipality which did opt out, passed personnel rules which are so vague in their nature that they do not afford the rights incumbent in PARA. And the most basic of those rights, and I understand them to be at issue right now, of course, are the right to bargain, and for the employee, the right to defend themselves through exercising the right to strike or to send a matter to binding arbitration.
Representative Porter?
Well, I'm glad you added that, as I understand it, too, that to opt out, you have to provide some mechanism for bargaining. My familiarity, obviously, is with Anchorage, and they opted out when they unified into the municipality some years back. And having been on both sides of the table in Anchorage, there's no employees that don't exercise their rights, believe me. And they're not in PARA. Maybe Anchorage is not a typical example, but I mean, I would take exception to your fact that employees lose rights if they're not in PARA.
Representative Porter, through the chair, I beg your indulgence. I'm not familiar adequately with the Anchorage ordinance. I'm referring specifically to another municipality of which I have direct contact and knowledge, and maybe that makes a point in itself, in that it's not uniform, and that's another point that supports PARA, is it's not the same in other places. Anchorage might have worked out its problems. I've read the newspapers in the past few years, and according to some of the employee representatives I've talked to from there, the problems are existing, but they at least have a set of rules, and that varies when you go to other places. Some places don't have as good a rules, perhaps.
President Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it really maybe it's more directed toward Brian. Brian, I know that in 92 we included teachers, I think many are done any but teachers into PARA. Now, Anchorage has opted out of PARA, but are Anchorage's teachers out of PARA? Mm-mm. They're included in PARA? So we have a split even within our community about who it applies to and who it doesn't.
I'm not that familiar with the teachers. So they're in PARA.
By the nodding heads, I'm getting answers yes and no.
Representative Sutton.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wonder if you'd elaborate a little bit on this binding arbitration question referred to in the 1991 resolution from the city of Fairbanks. They point out that binding arbitration divests a local governing body of its ability to essentially govern. Can you describe for us how you arrive at binding arbitration in the process of negotiation and contracts and so forth?
Class 1 employees, it's only cops and firemen.
Okay.
That's also dictated by statute, that it essentially applies to people whose services cannot be interrupted even for a very short amount of time. The need for binding arbitration arises in two areas. One is an interest arbitration, which is the negotiation process itself, and I think that's what you're referring to, and then the other is the grievance process. The need for binding arbitration is as simple as explaining the need to have an umpire at a basketball game, or the need to have a referee at a good boxing match. You've got two good contenders. They're in the ring to try to work out their differences or be victorious, to walk away with what it is that they need, but they need somebody, a third party, to walk in and settle the matter. The issue isn't who should always win, but having a third party come in and settle the dispute. And that's the beauty of binding arbitration. That's the purpose of it.
And people agree to be bound by it. But Mr. Chairman, the reason this provision is there for firemen and policemen is what? Because are they prohibited from striking?
Yes.
It's because these are considered essential services. Life and safety depend upon them, and therefore those employees do not have the liberty of taking economical actions against the employer and must work. And since there's no quid pro quo, the arbitrator comes in and essentially takes the best offer on both sides and decides between the two. All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to call Claudia Douglas up. No, we don't have to get out of here.
Okay.
Station.
This court thing.
It's up in the next committee.
Oh, well, that's
right.
Up in
the resources room. Claudia?
I'll try to be brief. Thank you, Chairman Hudson, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to make a few remarks in front of this committee regarding House Bill 255. My name is Claudia Douglas, and I'm president of NE Alaska. It's my first time to testify in front of a gender-challenged committee before. And it's quite an experience.
Write that one down.
I shouldn't say intellectually challenged.
NE Alaska opposes House Bill 255 as well as a sponsor substitute for House Bill 255. The bill will allow municipalities and other political subdivisions, including school districts, to conduct elections to determine if employees are to continue under the provisions of Alaska State Law 2340, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to give you copies of some testimony here. Since the early 70s, state policy extended the statutory right to bargain to public employees. School employees struggled for over 15 years to be able to establish their rights to bargain under PARA, and particularly to be able to receive some sort of finality in the bargaining process. The school district's school employees have developed a successful pattern of bargaining under PARA for nearly 4 years. Bargaining provides public employees a good participatory way to influence decisions that affect their workplace. At the bargaining table, public employees share in the decision-making process affecting wages and working conditions. They have become more responsive and better able to exchange ideas and information on operations with their administrators. Successful private businesses are moving to management models designed to involve employees in a meaningful participatory role. Studies have shown that successful school reform occurs in school districts where mature bargaining relations do exist. If the SSHB 255 were to become law, labor relations school districts between school districts and school employees would be disrupted. Good faith bargaining would give way to politics. Management and school boards would have greater latitude to delay and forestall the bargaining process. Some school districts could submit the question of continuance under para to voters annually or during each round of bargaining. In short, the school, municipality, the borough, or state employees would lose. Inconsistencies between units, school districts, and communities would occur. The bargaining process would be weakened and in some instances destroyed. The bill calls for a vote of the people. Who will pay for that election? Will the elections activate complicated adversarial clashes between special anti-labor groups with agendas opposed to working people and pro-labor groups? We live in a republic where representatives are elected to make decisions for their constituency in view of the public good. The issue of inclusion of school employees under PARA has been debated and decided at the state level. A majority of the legislature, after weighing carefully the facts and information, decided it is good public policy. In its declaration of the policy, it said, the legislature finds that joint decision-making is the modern way of administrating government. We urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you. And I will give copies for that.
Thank you very much. We'd like to have copies. Any questions? All right. Anyone else? I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? We're not on the air, are we?
No.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Would the sponsor or the sponsor's representative like to offer any final comments before we...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would answer any questions. I think Mr. Esau pretty well covered it, and the other testifiers pretty well covered it.
Are there any questions? Any? All right. The chair does not intend to move this bill at this time. And... I wanted to give the committee and the record, I believe, the opposing arguments on the issue, and I think we've documented that. And so this bill will be, I think, will help hold it over and perhaps take it up another time. Are there any other things that the committee wishes to bring before us this time? That concludes our agenda for the day. It is now 5:02, pretty close to 5 o'clock, and the Labor and Commerce Committee is hereby adjourned.
That was gender challenge, huh?
Gender challenge.